Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a chapter-by-chapter, verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues his message, The Purpose of the Gospel of John, as we pick up in John chapter 1, verse 1. And now, with today's study, here's Pastor Chuck.
So we turn in our Bibles to the Gospel according to John. The Gospel of John was the last of the Gospels that was written. It was written towards the close of that first century, written by John for the purpose of convincing people that Jesus is the Christ, that by believing in him, they might have life in his name. John declares his purpose in writing these books. He said, many other things did Jesus which are not written, but these things were written that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, and by believing have life in his name. So there is a definite purpose in John's mind as he wrote this book. And because this is the reason for this book, it is the best book to encourage an unbeliever to read. Because John wrote that they might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, and by believing have life in his name. That's why he wrote it. And he's very upfront in telling you why he wrote it. And so it was written to counteract some of the false concepts concerning Jesus Christ. A lot of the heresy that had developed in the very first century. Now, Paul the Apostle warned the Ephesian elders that after I'm gone, I know that there are going to be wolves that are going to come in, not sparing the flock of God, but seeking to draw men after themselves. And from your own group, there will be of those who arise, who will even deny our very Lord. And before Paul was gone long from Ephesus, these things were already happening. The false teachers were moving in, perverting the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. A system known as Gnosticism was one of the early systems of belief that permeated the church and began to draw people away into false concepts concerning Jesus Christ. The church wasn't very old before the Arian heresy arose, the denying of the deity of Jesus Christ, putting him on the level of man. Gnosticism, with its concepts of Jesus as really confusing concepts of Jesus, part divine, part man, and yet sort of a phantom kind of a thing. They made up stories that As he walked on the sandy beach, he wouldn't leave footprints because he wasn't really real. And their idea was anything that is real is evil. The world is so evil that God could not have created the world. And so originally there was the pure holy God, and emanations went out from this pure holy God. And finally, one of these emanations got so far from God that it no longer knew God, and it was this emanation that created the world, and thus the world was created by an evil force, and everything material is evil. And so Jesus could not have been a man, else he would have been evil. So he was a phantom and a lot of weird things. And so John wrote this epistle, or this letter, or this gospel, actually, in order to correct some of those early false teachings that had begun to permeate the church. Now, It is interesting that as the writers begin the Gospels, they each one picked a different place to begin. And with the Gospel of Matthew, he began with the generation or the genealogy of Jesus going back to Abraham. And when Mark began his gospel, he began it at the baptism of Jesus by John. When Luke began his gospel, he began it with the annunciation to Zacharias, the father of John the Baptist, the forerunner of Jesus. But when John begins his gospel, he goes clear on back to the very beginning of time, which had no beginning. He goes back even further than Genesis. The book of Genesis is the beginning of creation. In the beginning, God created. But God existed long before he created. And so Genesis, you go back to the beginning of creation, but before that, God was. God existed. So John goes back to that infinite, eternal past and declares, in the beginning was the Word. Now, the Greeks talked much about the Logos. And according to the Greek philosophy, everything pre-existed in a thought. Anything that you see existed in thought before it became form. In other words, this pulpit here began with a thought. Some craftsman had in his mind a design, an idea for a podium. And so he drew it out on a piece of paper, but it was the expression of his thought. And so before anything exists, it has pre-existed in a thought. So to the Greek philosopher, the thought was the origin of things. Well, the Bible takes you one step further back. It said, if there was a thought, then there had to be a thinker, because you can't have a thought without a thinker. So in the beginning, God. In the beginning was the Word. And so it actually goes back even before the thought. You have the existence of the one who thought, or the existence of God. So in the beginning, God. Here in the beginning was the Word. He was existing then. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Powerful declaration of the deity of Jesus Christ. So plain, so straight, so forthright, that even a little child in reading it could not be confused. It would take a Jehovah Witness to confuse this passage of Scripture. And they did, by the insertion of an article, the, and the Word was, or a God. But they had to create something that doesn't exist in the original language in order to twist this whole thing around. John is starting out with the plain declaration that Jesus, the Word, is God. Just as straight and forthright as can be declared. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. So now he comes to creation. You see, John goes back before creation. In the beginning, before there was anything. There was the Word. He was with God. He was God. He was in the beginning with God. And then creation, all things were made by Him. In the account in Genesis, we read, "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth." The word God in Hebrew there is Elohim, which is a plural form. Now, there are those who say, well, the plural form was used for emphasis. But that appears to be an invention, because God is also referred to as the singular. And if it is used only for emphasis, then it would be confusing to use the same term to refer to God in the singular. It is my opinion that when the God El singular is used, that it is a reference to the Father. That the Elohim is a reference to the triunity of the Godhead, one God existing in three persons. And God said, "Let us make man in our image and after our likeness." Who was God talking to? In the divine counsels, there was that creation, the Father, the Son, and the Spirit in divine counsel. Let us make man in our image after our likeness. Here in John, the first chapter, Jesus is ascribed as the creator of all things. Paul, as he is writing to the Colossians concerning the preeminence of Jesus, declares that he is not only the creator, but he is the object of creation. By him were all things made, and for him. So he is not only the creator, but the object of creation. All things were made by him, the universe around us and all of its life forms. And without him was not anything made that was made. And in him was life. And the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, but the darkness comprehended it not, or apprehended it not, or could not lay hold of it. Jesus said, "I am the light of the world. He that cometh unto me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life." Now, here it is declared that the light shineth in darkness. This is the reference to the coming of Jesus Christ to the earth. Here he is, the light of the world, shining in the darkness, but the darkness does not apprehend it. Now, there was a man who was sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness. And twice we will read of John's witness here in chapter 1, verse 15. John bare witness of him and cried, saying, "This was he of whom I spake." And then he also testified in verse 34, "And I saw and bear record that this is the Son of God." That's the testimony of John the Baptist concerning Jesus Christ. So there was a man who was sent from God. His name was John. He came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. Now he, John, was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. And that was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world. The world was made by him, and the world knew him not. Can you grasp that one? Jesus, the light. He came to shine in the darkness, the true light. He was in the world. We are already told that all things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. He was in the world, and the world was made by him. And yet, the world knew him not. That is, the world of man. it would appear that there were aspects of nature and of the world that did know him. It is interesting that those who were possessed with evil spirits often cried out, "We know who you are." Evidently, the winds and the waves knew who he was. For when he was standing in the little ship and it was about to sink, when he spoke to the wind and the waves and said, "Peace, be still," they obeyed his voice. They knew who he was. The rocks evidently knew who he was. Because when the Pharisees were encouraging him to rebuke his disciples on the day of his triumphant entry, he said, "I say unto you that if these should hold their peace, these very stones would immediately cry out." They knew who he was. But it was only the darkened minds of man that failed to recognize him. He was in the world. The world was made by him. And yet the world knew him not. Evidently, that little donkey knew who he was. No man had ever ridden on that little donkey before. And yet, I'm sure that when Jesus sat on him, he was just as docile as could be. He knew who he was. Someone has put words in the mouth of that little donkey. I think it was Chatterton. I don't know if I can recall it or not. When fishes flew and forest walked and figs grew upon a thorn, some moment when the moon was blood, then surely I was born. With ears like errant wings, the devil's walking parody of all four-footed things. The ancient outlaw of the earth with stubborn, tattered will. Mock me, scourge me, I am dumb, but I hold my secret still. Fools, I also had my day, one fierce day and sweet. I heard the shouts around my ears, and there were palm branches at my feet. He was in the world. The world was made by him. And the world knew him not. One step further, he came to his own, and his own received him not. He said, "I am come to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." His own. He was their promised Messiah. He came to his own, but they said, "We have no king but Caesar." They said, "We will not have this man to rule over us." And his own received him not, and the prophecy of Isaiah was fulfilled. He was despised and rejected of men. But, glorious good news, as many as received him, to them gave he the power, the authority, to become the sons of God, even as many as believed on his name. So here he is, in the beginning with God, the creator of all things, coming to his creation, not being recognized, not being apprehended, coming to his own, not being received, and yet as many as would receive him. And so the gospel of grace, as many as would receive him, to them he gave the power to become the sons of God. The Son of God becoming man in order that he might make each of us sons of God who would believe in his name. Which were born not of blood, first of all. You cannot become a son of God through physical genealogy. I am not a son of God because my parents were Christians. My children are not Christians because I am a Christian. It's not of blood. It's not something that you can inherit from your parents or pass on to your children. This dynamic life as a child of God is not of the will of the flesh. It is not something that you can set your mind to and become. That is, I'm going to live this new dynamic life. I'm not going to walk in darkness anymore. I'm going to live a generous, self-sacrificing life, the life that is the ideal that God has declared for man. You can't do it by the will of the flesh. Nor is it by the will of man. It isn't by the force or coercion of others or the encouragement of others. You cannot come into this new life because someone is pushing you or coercing you into it. This new birth can only come from God, born of God as a child of God. So, I was born once by blood, by the will of the flesh, and by the will of man. Here I am. That was my physical birth. But my spiritual birth can't take place that way. The spiritual birth has to come from God. And so I have been born again by the Spirit of God, the new life.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of John on our next broadcast as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. This message has been provided to you by the generous supporters of the Word for Today. For additional information about how you can support this ministry, please visit us online at thewordfortoday.org, where you can order a physical copy of today's message by mentioning John 1. There you'll also find free message downloads from Pastor Chuck, as well as links to our podcast and other resources to help you grow in your Christian walk. For those of you who wish to call, our number is 1-800-272-9673. Our office hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. Join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
May the Lord be with you and bless you, give you a beautiful day tomorrow. God keep you in the love of Jesus Christ and strengthen you by His Spirit in your inner man. And may He help you to begin to comprehend what is the length, the breadth, the depth, the height of His love. And begin to understand more and more the things that He has prepared for those who love Him and wait on Him. May God cause His grace to abound towards you through Jesus Christ our Lord.
The Word for Today resource, Prayer, Our Glorious Privilege, is a collection of studies and prayers Pastor Chuck presents to you with scriptures and principles on which to build a glorious prayer life. As Franklin Graham remarked regarding the book, with great clarity, Pastor Chuck writes about the honor we have to approach the throne of grace and mercy through prayer. He masterfully teaches the principles of praying to God the Father, and he emphasizes the power that is ours when we rely on the Holy Spirit to guide and nurture our prayer lives. I encourage all believers to study Pastor Chuck's book based upon biblical principles. You can order Prayer, Our Glorious Privilege by visiting thewordfortoday.org. I'm your host, Kathy Parrish. Thanks for listening.
Little country church on the edge of town. People coming every day from miles around, for meetings and for Sunday school. And it's very plain to see, it's not the way it used to be.
This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.